Today's lesson, we're continuing in Luke. It's Christianity 102, and it's the title of it is Live to Benefit Others. And we're going to be, the background passages are from Luke 6 through chapter 8, but our lesson verses are focused out of Luke 6. Now, I've got on the whiteboard, I've got living to benefit others is not about works, but actions that are motivated by love. That's the theme of this lesson, that if you live to benefit others, to try to help them, you're going to show that in your actions and not just talking about it, not just lip service. And it's all motivated by love. Now, I know that y'all, you know, the class is called Joy Class, and I don't know how long it's been called that, but for a long time, I'm sure. And I know you've seen this before, Jesus first, others second, yourself last, from an acronym for Joy. And the question that I ask is, that's the order that we put it in, or we should put it in as believers. What order would a non-believer put this in?
Yourself first, others everything else last.
Everything, yeah. And Jesus probably certainly last, mm-hmm. because they just, you know, they just don't know what they're missing. So let's look at our first verses in Luke 6, verses 27 through 29. And then we're going to skip some and do 35 and 36. So...
I've got something I'll read when you get through.
Okay. So we're in Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 29. But to you who are this is Jesus speaking. But to you who are willing to listen, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who hurt you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, offer the other cheek also. If someone demands your coat, offer your shirt also. And then we skip down to verses 35 through 36. Love your enemies. Do good to them. Lend to them without expecting to be repaid. Then your reward from heaven will be very great, and you will truly be acting as children of the Most High. For He is kind to those who are unthankful and wicked. You must be compassionate just as your Father is compassionate. So let's look back at those first verses that we read, and let's identify Jesus' four love commands. So for the title in my Bible for this little section of verses is called Love Your Enemies. So so he wants us to know the commands. So love your enemies is the first one. Love your enemies. And then in that same verse, do good to those who hate you. Now, how hard is that going to be? Do good to those who hate you. And then bless those who curse you. And pray for those who mistreat you. Those are his four love commands. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. And pray for those who mistreat you. So Jesus emphasizes in the first verse of that we looked at, verse 27, he emphasizes the need to listen to him. So if you listen to Jesus, you were someone who had decided to follow his lead and obey his instruction. Does that sound familiar? Because we should do that. That's right. So when we choose to listen, because, you know, it's all about choice. Through my life as a Christian, and more as the more I study, I realize that this is all about choice. We choose to believe it or we don't. We choose to have faith or we don't. You know, it's all about everything you do, there's a choice. Everything you do, there's a choice. So if we choose to listen to Jesus, we're going to follow his lead and we're going to obey his instructions. Just like it says in that first verse. But to you who are willing to listen, I say, and that's Jesus, love, you know, he goes on to tell us his four love commands. So why is it so difficult sometimes to listen to him, to follow his lead, and obey his instruction?
It's that nature in us.
The nature. Because he makes us step outside of the very comfortable box that we have made a home in. And he does not want us to stay there. Because if you stay there and you get complacent, you're not going to be out there winning souls for Christ. You're not going to be making a difference in somebody's life. You're not going to, because you're all comfortable in the box lid's on. So stepping outside of your comfort zone is what you have to do sometime when you choose to listen to him and follow his lead and obey his instruction. So, the definition of agape love in our lesson is self-sacrificing love. You know, there's all kinds of different ones that the pastors will tell you, and they'll give you the definition, and agape is the one that is talked about a lot in the pulpit, and it's self-sacrificing love. And this is the definition of Jesus' life and ministry. He had self-sacrificing love for all of us. And the one thing he did is the ultimate that he did for all of us. It knows no limits. Jesus' love for us knows no limits. He sees value in every person because he made us. So we may not see it in somebody, but he sees it in everybody. And he works to provide the best for others, not just himself. He doesn't even think about himself. Jesus did. He thought about everybody else, from before him, after him, beyond him, after us, people that haven't even been born, Jesus died on the cross for. That sometimes, you know, that's hard to imagine. But, I mean, he did it for every person. Jesus' love was not based on emotion or any kind of sentimental value. He didn't do it, you know. I mean, I have an emotional love for John, but I also have a respectful love. But that's not the kind, you know, because emotional love, you can love somebody one day and hate them the next day, you know, all in the relationship. But Jesus was not like that. His was consistent. It was not based. He didn't love us one day and hate us the next. He loved us every day. He still loves us. He's going to love us a long time from now. When we mess up, when we leave here, he's still going to love us. Because before we got here, every one of us sinned in some sort of way. Because we can't help it. Because it's our nature. Right? That's right. So, agape love is a choice. Self-sacrificing love is a choice. As believers, when we follow him and obey him and take his lead, agape love becomes our way of life. That is the way that he was and is, and that's the way he wants to be, because we're supposed to be in the image of Jesus. And in order to be like him in his image, you got to act like him. It's not about words, it's about action. I remember whenever I hear that word action and relate it to the Bible, I think about Brother Norman. He loved the book of Acts because it was full of action. They did things. He said there was love and there was war and there was fighting, you know, all the kind of things. And he says, what movie could be better than the book of Acts? But I remember him saying that, and I always think about him when I hear the word action involved in your spiritual life. Jesus never indicates that some enemies might be excluded from his command, love your enemies. We do not get to choose which enemies we're going to try to love. We have to love them all. He didn't exclude anybody. You know, he made us, but then after we get up, you know, that's why children are so fortunate. Because they don't know, and if something happens to them, they don't have that understanding of choices and wrong and right sometimes when they're so very young. And if something happens to them, and they're going to heaven and they're going to be sitting with Jesus. And we know that. But when you get up old enough to know that you have a choice, that's when they take their own life and try to control it. Jesus brought us here, and He still loves us, even when we mess up, even as believers when we mess up. We make the choice to follow Him, but we can't make the choice on who to show this love toward, this self-sacrificing love. And that's what this church does with the food closet and the clothes pantry and just all the different things that we do. When Brother Derek and them go out visiting, he doesn't choose and say, we didn't like the way he looked when he came to visit, so we're not going to go visit him. You know, it's self-sacrificing love when he goes out to visit and try to win souls. He does it beyond everything else that he does. So we make the choice to follow him, but we can't make the choice on who we show our self-sacrificing love to. Jesus loved them all. And if we're going to be like him, we have to love them all. There's just no other way around it. The Jewish rabbis taught in the synagogues back in Jesus' day that to bless those who bless them. So he taught, somebody blesses you, you bless them back. They didn't believe in the radical thinking of Jesus. That's another reason that he made them so mad, I believe, the more I study, is because he was so radical. And radical means, without looking it up in a dictionary, to me it means different. Out there, you know, cutting your own path, making your own way, being radical. And that's what Jesus was. Jesus, the next love command, bless those who curse you. And the rabbis were like, what? What is this man teaching in our synagogue? We say bless. You know, I think that's one of the main reasons they hated him so bad, because he was preaching so different than what they did. He was making them look like fools, they thought, because their hearts were so hardened. It's another choice we make to follow him and obey him. So how does that work for you to bless those who curse you?
It's hard.
It would be. It would be. I mean, for somebody that doesn't like me, I kind of took a saying. My dad always, you know, and God bless him, I can't wait to see him again one day, but he used to tell me, don't waste your time on anybody that you don't like, because life's too short and life's way too long. So, but, you know, if I don't like somebody, then that means they probably don't like me. But those are the ones that, you know, that I should be praying for blessings upon and maybe trying to be nice. So, and I know that's hard to do sometimes. Jesus wants us to pray for those who mistreat us. Praying for good to happen to your enemies shows you've made the radical choice that self-sacrificing love requires. So, and I thought about Lee, because in my material it gave an example of somebody who had something taken from them. And I thought about y'all when your house was broken into, you know. And I know that you have forgiven them and you've done everything that this lesson talks about, you know, but it says to pray for good to happen to your enemies.
I was going to say, I'm trying.
Well, yeah. You know, the judge has said he has to get his GED, so maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, maybe it is.
Maybe it's a good thing.
Maybe it is, to give him something to work toward. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That's interesting.
Young kid.
That's kind of a radical thing for a judge almost,
like,
isn't it?
It's like a golden gig to set for himself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To do good.
So maybe he'll get a job.
Yeah, it's just so he won't have to steal from people.
Right.
So do we pray for our enemies? Do we pray for our enemies, whoever they may be? You know, I mean, when you think of the word enemy, that sounds kind of harsh sometimes. But, you know, anybody that that you think of, that you dislike, or you may have some sort of conflict with, I guess that's what the Bible is going to determine as an enemy.
I guess he would have been my enemy, and I do pray for him.
Yeah.
And his, I don't know if it was his wife, his mother said it was his wife. She was pregnant, she looked like she was ready to pop when we went down to court, so I don't know if she's had her baby yet or not.
Yeah. So he needs to have a GED so he can take care of a family and be focused on things like that. So in verse 29, Jesus gives us examples of Christian love in action. Turn the other cheek. If your coat is taken, give them your shirt. That's tough. But in Jesus' time, the reason, a lot of these examples that he gives us, they come from references to things that the way they were when he was around. But they transition all the way up to, that's why it's such a living, breathing thing. In Jesus' time, a blow to the face was the ultimate insult, to be hit in the face. The law allowed, back then, the person who was hit to hit them back. Jesus, and it even said that if somebody broke your nose, the law allowed you to hit them and break their nose. You know,
a lot of broken noses.
Yeah, so Jesus called us to go beyond that law and show self-sacrificing love and give them the other cheek. So that is so radical compared to what they were used to. They were used to being able to hit back and get their revenge, so to speak. But Jesus said, no, turn the other cheek. Turn the other cheek. He repeats his command to love your enemies in verse 35. That's how important it was. And all these things that are a part of this are, you know, love your enemies is like the topical one, and then all these other things break down into that. Lead and don't expect, and then also lend and don't expect it to be returned. Give because they need it. If you loan somebody something, money or something you have, and don't expect to get it back, money probably, because you are giving it out of this self-sacrificing love because they need it, not because you need it back. And a lot of times people that are genuine, you know, will return it as quickly as possible. But if you don't get it back, then, you know, you're not supposed to worry about it and dwell on it and muster resentment and all that about it. This kind of action carries with it a reward. He never said it would be a material reward, though. Doesn't mean you're going to get, you know, tenfold back what you gave. We as Christians receive eternal life and God's grace, which is the ultimate. Is there anything greater than that? No. And then you will be the sons of the Most High. Talked about that in those verses. We will be in the presence of a caring God because we are the sons and daughters of the Most High. Because of his graciousness, God provides good things even to selfish people. You know, because a lot of times, and I know we've all thought it, you know, look at this person. How come they... I mean, look at the way they are and look how they are living, you know.
How they prosper.
And how can they behave that way and still, you know, yada, 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 the whole thing. But God is gracious even to those selfish people. He knows their heart. He knows this parts of them and aspects of them that we don't know. And so we just have to leave it that their turn will come. You know, if they're not doing something they're supposed to do, God will certainly take care of them. He doesn't give love based on what we deserve. He gives because he is merciful. The only reason that we are here and not, I just can't imagine how it would have been if he hadn't died for us. I just cannot imagine the world. This time probably would have already been gone already. You know, we just would have been awful. So we have to remember that we didn't do anything to deserve this. He does it because he's got mercy. if we accept it, if we accept his mercy, we got to be like him. We got to just live every day to be like him. Let's look at our other verses. Luke 6:30. We're going to go back and pick up the verses in between the verses that we just read. We're going to read 30 through 34. It says, "Give to anyone who asks, and when things are taken away from you, don't try to get them back. Do to others as you would like them to do to you." If you love only those who love you, why should you get credit for that? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to only to those who do good to you, why should you get credit? Even sinners do that much. And if you lend money only to those who can repay you, why should you get credit? Even sinners will lend to other sinners for a full return. Those are pretty strong, aren't they? Jesus didn't mean for Christians to give and give until they had nothing left to give. He wanted us to be like him. He wanted us to go overboard with our generosity. And I believe if you only did it one time, if your heart is right, God's going to be happy. That's what you got to remember. It's the willingness, that self-sacrificing willingness to give something that you have that somebody else needs a whole lot worse than you think you need it. Yes, ma'am.
Neighbor come over to the house back in November and said he needed $10. He said he needed to go get some beer, so I gave him the $10. I haven't seen that money back. I said, well, you know, I just loan it to him, you know.
Yeah.
He pays it back, all right. We all will die and leave it anyway.
Yeah.
So I look at it.
That's right. So, if someone takes things from you, don't ask for them back. Again, material things don't matter at all when we think of our eternal life with Jesus. The golden rule, do unto others like you want them to treat you. Don't cause harm to come to somebody. Instead, help them. Work to understand them and their need and be sensitive to that need. If we follow the golden rule, we're going to be unselfish. So, I mean, if you treated somebody ugly, how do you think they're going to treat you back?
Ugly.
That's right. In defense. And they're going to go into defense mode. Just like, you know, if somebody treats you ugly, we can't help it. We're human. The sin nature. We're going to get defensive. I get defensive in a heartbeat. Especially if it's something about my family or something, you know. I will. So if we follow the golden rule, we live unselfishly. We live in a big old selfish world. It's a big old round ball, and it's full of selfishness. We really do. We have to make hard choices that those who know and love us might not always agree with. So your family, your closest people that know you, they're not always going to understand the things that you do. For example, I'm going to use you, Lee, I hope you don't mind, because this is perfect. Say this boy goes and gets his GED, and he's doing great. And say Lee decides that she wants to help him because she's able to start college. And I guarantee you she's got a daughter and two granddaughters that might think that she had lost her mind. But that's what it's talking about. Being like Jesus. Not that you would ever do that, but that's a perfect example of somebody, of living in a selfish world, and sometimes we're going to make choices that even our family doesn't understand. But if it's in her heart and she knows she's doing it for all the right reasons, you know, she may move forward. Being Christ-like baffles and confuses people because it goes against their human nature and thought process. And that's speaking mostly, toward unbelievers. The things that we do as Christians, some people, you know, people that are not believers, have no clue. I never will forget one time. I think I told you all this before. I may not have. One of my friends on Facebook, she was going through something, and she's a personal friend too, but she's on Facebook with me. And she was going through something, and I told her, and she didn't know what to do, and she was just putting it out on Facebook. And I said, well, what you got to do is step back, be patient, and let the Lord tell you what you need to do. And then one of our other friends, who's a guy, and I'm unsure about his faith, he said, what are you doing? Just do what feels good. Do what feels good. That's what you need to do. Don't worry about all that other, talking about what I had said. So to me, that is what that means. It baffles. I baffled and confused him because it went against, you know, he was like, do what makes you feel good. Well, if we did what made us feel good, we'd all be in trouble. So we really would. Expect persecution when you show radical Jesus love. Expect persecution. We're going to be persecuted because, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse because of what we believe. And we show this radical Jesus love to people that the Jewish people, that people in Jesus' day didn't understand because it went against everything that they were used to. It was taking them out of their comfort zone, out of that box, and making them think about and possibly do things that they had never imagined that they would do. Expect eternal life for showing radical Jesus love. That's the ultimate. Remember, even if we die for David Jeremiah, you know, he's still preaching on prophecy and in the book of Revelation, and he talked about the rewards that the people that, you know, there will be rewards for people who die for their faith. There's, you know, at the judgment seat. So let's look at our next verses, chapter 6 still, verses 37 through 38 and 41 through 42. Do not judge others and you will not be judged. Do not condemn others or it will all come back against you. Forgive others and you will be forgiven. Give and you will receive. Your gift will return to you in full, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, running over and poured into your lap. The amount you give will determine the amount you get back. And then verse 41 and 42. And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? How can you think of saying, friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. Do not judge. Do not judge. That's what those verses are about. Do not criticize others and don't be hurtful. I mean, even if you... Now, criticizing somebody out into their face, that's one thing. That's, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. A cat fight or something. That's right. But even criticizing them and talking about them behind their, you know, going in the church. Look at that. I cannot believe she wore that to church. I cannot believe it. Can you believe that? That is wrong. There's no different. Do not judge. Even if you do it without them knowing or hearing, guess who else knows you did it? Besides the person you're talking to. Jesus does. And what about the other believer you told? What does that do to them? So Joy's sitting there, and she's telling Betty Rooker, oh, Lord, I can't. What does that do to Betty?
I don't know. Betty tells somebody else
to
dance a little more.
Well, maybe not. Betty stops it. But what does that do to what she thinks about Joy and her faith? Just using you as an example. And then what does that do to Betty, you know, when she sees, well, you know, if she does it, maybe I can do it. And then she goes, she tells Miss Lois something. I know Miss Lois ain't going to say nothing else.
I don't say nothing but the truth, though.
Oh, my goodness. So, what does that do to them? People judging is God's job only. But, man, that's a tough one. Because I do it at work. I know I do it at work. I mean, I do it and I don't even realize it, probably. people judging is God's job only. Do not condemn. This is one step past judging. Don't blame anybody for anything. That's one step. If you're judging them and you condemn them, you are one step past the judge. Don't set up shop as judge and jury. You never know all the facts. Only God knows. If you weren't there, it's hearsay. Even if you were there, you don't really know. You know your side of what happened, but the other person's side, it's like it was a totally different place and a totally different time because they never match. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
When you've been confronted with something that's going on and they never match. The two people that had the altercation, their sides never match.
Unless you're sworn in as a jury, you got no business judging.
That's right. Who knows? God knows, and He's the only one who knows. So give and you will receive. Can somebody give this? Give us an example of this in your life. Give and you will receive.
Well, you can't outgive God, that's for sure.
That's right. I like that. You can't outgive God, no matter what you do.
Sometimes just giving gives you pleasure. It makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that I receive that inner peace.
Yep. Just knowing that you did it and you're not expecting anything back. You just want to help them. And I want to tell y'all, when we were here at this church before, this made me think about it. Jackie was in my Sunday school class, and Mary Mourn, her husband, and Cecil, and Oliver's daughter and her husband were in there, and Jerry and Janice Todd, and Mary discovered this black family. And I think they came to our class one time. I can't remember, but they needed help. I don't remember who it was. It was they only came that maybe once or twice. And so they had some kids, and they had just moved here, and they needed help. And Mary found out what they needed. And she came to me, and we came to the class, and everybody contributed money for food or whatever, and Mary went and bought groceries for them. They didn't have anything, and it seems like it was a couple of kids and John, and they needed gas to get. He had a job, but he needed gas to get back and forth till he got a paycheck. And me and John, you know, we don't have a lot now. We sure didn't have very much back then, but we had a little bit of money in our savings account, and we gave them. And I'm not telling you this to boast. I'm just telling you for the lesson. We gave them money that we probably really couldn't afford to give away, but we got him a gas card at the gas station so he could go and get gas when he needed it, and it was specifically for that. So I knew he wasn't going to use it for nothing else. And then, do you know that after that, it was like it was pouring down rain, blessings on us. You know, just little things, and it made me think back, you know, well, we did that for those people, and now God's given, and He does. He gives back. Even when you think
so
that
you can't outgive Him.
You know, I mean, He provided for us, and we helped those people. Now, we never saw them again, but we helped them. They were fed, and they had a way to go. And whether they'll pay that forward one day, you know, I don't know.
What you did in your heart was right.
That's right. And
it's up to them what they do.
That's right.
Just like I gave that neighbor $10. He says, going to buy a beer, you know, okay.
Yeah.
What you know you did in your heart was right.
That's right.
It's up to them and God what they do.
What they do. That's just like when you witness to somebody. It's not up to you. God fixes their heart.
Right.
So they'll accept. You just got to give the message to them. But you don't have to walk away with a saved person. Mm-hmm. Not every time.
Just plant the seed.
Just plant the seed. That's right.
Just like when I asked my neighbor, when I saw him out getting groceries in, they've been to Walmart. I said, y'all been grocery shopping? He said, yeah, we went to the new, where the oak tree used to be.
Uh-huh. Food outlet. Mm-hmm.
He said, and he was talking about the grocery stuff. I said, well, I'm on my way to church. I said, come visit us. Come up there to Highland. He asked where I went. I said, Highland Avenue Baptist. I said, come on up there and visit. come to church.
Yeah.
I met a lady in there yesterday. I invited her.
Did you?
she almost got part of my groceries. We got to talking so in line.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the cashier was just taking my groceries and putting them in her basket.
So let's go on and talk about the speck and the log. This word picture that Jesus gives us points out the ridiculous nature of a judgmental person. It's kind of comical, but it's because it makes it so obvious that you're trying to figure out how to help your friend who's got a speck and you got a log so big you can't even see. So you're not taking care of yourself first so you can then be better prepared to take care of somebody. So are you harder on others than you are yourself? That's the question they have to ask about that. We all sin. Let God deal with our sin and the sins of others. He's the only one qualified. Remember, he's the only one that can be the judge. He wants us to pay attention to our sin and let him deal with everybody else's sin. So he wants you to pay attention to your sin first, and then you'll be better prepared to help somebody else. Let's look at our last verses, 46 through 48. So why do you keep calling me Lord, Lord, when you don't do what I say? I will show you what it's like when someone comes to me, listens to my teaching, and then follows it. It is like a person building a house who digs deep and lays the foundation on solid rock. When the flood waters rise and break against the house, it stands firm because it is well built. So Jesus doesn't like lip service. He doesn't like words. He wants actions. He wants to see you. If you say you're a Christian and you live like Jesus, well, let's just show somebody that you do. Show somebody that you do. He doesn't like lip service disciples. They talk, but they don't act. This is Jesus' definition of an obedient follower. He hears Jesus' words and he acts on them, like the house built on the proper foundation. Believers who are us avoid spiritual disaster when we build our lives on the foundation of faith that speaks and acts obediently to Jesus. One of the most powerful ways to point people to Jesus involves you living a life of grace and obedience. If they see it in you, they see your actions, they see how you treat other people, they're going to think about it. You may plant a seed and you may never lay a word on them. They just may see how you act. They know you're a believer and you give them an example and you don't even realize you've given them an example. So that means that we walk the talk. We say it and we act it. So with intention this week, I want you to show somebody radical love that you consider an enemy. That self-sacrificing love, agape love, show it to somebody that you consider an enemy. And everybody's got one. You know, it doesn't have to be some vicious enemy. It can be just, you know, anybody. Anybody in your life that you don't necessarily kind of click with. Show them some radical Jesus love. Anybody have any questions? Complaints or comments? And I wanted to also bring up, Derek gave me, it's somebody else that Lee met and invited. He gave me the sheet, and we need to think about our list of our people this week. You know, because Easter's coming up, and I'm hoping they'll come. People will come. But if there's people missing, like Willie and Dimple, if somebody will promise to call them this week. I know Miss Carolyn calls them, and I know my mother calls them. But and then Debbie Curtis and her mother, and who's Miss Carolyn's out? Zeta's out. Is she sick?
She went to the lake.
Oh, okay.
Betty Johnson.
Yeah, now, you know, he talked about her. She's had bronchitis. Mm-hmm. So if all of y'all will just please just take somebody, and just pick somebody and call them that's missing.
I've got Betty's on my list.
Nobody?
You were okay. I'm going to read this.
Okay, well, let me mention this lady.
Yeah.
Her name is Anna?
Anna.
Okay. Oh, they've got Anna. It's I-N-A.
I-N-A.
They've got Anna Geis.
Anna. No, Anna is the little black lady.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You met her.
Parking lot. Mm-hmm.
You met in the parking lot of Save-A-Lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. She lives in the HEPA building.
Okay. That's where Betty Johnson lives, isn't it? So, you invited her, and so...
She was here last Sunday.
Was she? Mm-hmm. Oh, good, good. So, she's a prospect for our class.
Yeah.
And so...
I don't know if she's going to be... I meant to call her yesterday, and the grandkids came and got involved.